always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
So if you look back at Hispanic voters at this point in the 2020 cycle, Joe Biden had a 25-point lead. Look at where that lead is today. It's just 7 points. Donald Trump right now at 44%, if that held, would be the best performance for a Republican candidate among Hispanic voters since George W. Bush back in 2004. And this is part of a larger trend line, Kate, that we're seeing among non-white voters. We see it among black voters as well. We've discussed that on this program before, whereby they're much more favorable to Donald Trump than they were 4 years ago. And of course, Donald Trump did better amongst those both of those groups in 2020 versus how he did in 2016.
It is DEFCON 1 over at the Commie News Network. Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL, your number one station, as we always say, for live and local conservative talk. Six local shows, Dan Bongino Middays, a host of really good, solid, fantastic weekend programming. Dr. Randy Tolbert kicking off Saturday mornings all the way through Stand and Fight with Nick Schroer on Sunday evenings. The Danny DeFine Show and so much more. We got all the we got the paranormal shows. We got the comedy shows. We got Todd Showalter, Joey V throughout the weekend. It doesn't get any better than this, does it?
SR1 Sundays.
SR1 Sundays.
Famed local legend Bill McClellan. He is actually on the Right Mind Show.
I saw
tomorrow. That.
I'm going to be definitely listening. I love Bill McClellan.
We're going to show that a conservative and a liberal can get along. And he actually came here in studio, so that's even more brave of him. Thank you, Bill.
Was he impressed with our overly ostentatious studios?
Of course. He could not stand Todd, but everything else was fine. That's most everyone's reaction.
You know, McClellan's a liberal. He makes no bones about that. But he's not a wild-eyed, crazy liberal. And I gained all respect for him. I worked on the Bill Corrigan campaign, county executive, 2010. He was at the victory party for Bill Corrigan. He wanted Bill Corrigan to win. He supported Bill Corrigan. He was as disappointed as all of us when the numbers didn't come in like we expected. So I gained a newfound respect for Bill to cross the aisle and support Bill Corrigan when he knew that Charlie Dooley at the time, the county executive, was a complete disaster.
McClellan is a sane liberal, which is a rare breed. They're kind of like the dodo bird. As we were just saying, we've got tons of programming here. If you miss any of our shows, and look, we kind of have a friendly contest here every week. Chris and I like to see our podcast numbers higher than everybody else's. So we're going to urge you to download the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show podcast over the weekend. If you missed any episodes this week, you missed a lot. Make sure you listen to us, and you can listen to the other shows too. Seriously, we want you to listen to all of our podcasts. We want you to find those podcasts wherever you do find podcasts. They're awesome. It's fantastic. Joey V produces ours and gets them up lickety-split right after our show is over. NewsTalkSTL.com is chock full of stuff. And, you know, I think we kind of take for granted the fact that as we're approaching our third year anniversary. Incredible. Can we believe it? Dan Bongino just celebrated his third year anniversary today. We'll celebrate ours in July. It's great to have Dan on our station. I think we sometimes forget, we take for granted, you guys know all this stuff. We got new listeners every day. New listeners, please go to our Facebook page, our Twitter page, check us out on Rumble, YouTube, Twitter, whatever your favorite is. Like and follow us. That really helps us a lot. Helps us out with all of our metrics. Helps us show our advertisers how much we're delivering to the people of St. Louis and beyond. So we probably don't mention that enough, so we're mentioning it now. Over the weekend, I want you to catch up on everything News Talk STL. Just go to newstalkstl.com. And as I often hear, Vic Porcelli's really good about this. He's been saying it every day. Your telephone is your radio. It's your new radio. News Talk STL has a really cool app. It's really easy to use. You download it, and with the click of one button, you're listening to Chris and I right now. You can Bluetooth that to your car speakers, to your home system, to your Sonos speakers, your Roku, your television, whatever. Have your if you have no idea what I'm talking about, ask your kids. They'll figure it out for you. Folks, we had some sad news to start off the show. Chris has an update for this. We had a really tragic incident involving Representative Ben Baker, who is a great man from Neosho, Missouri. He's got a wonderful family. He's a special public servant, and he lost one of his daughters and his son-in-law. They're doing missionary work, literally doing the Lord's work. Talk about courageous people giving everything of themselves, giving their lives in Haiti. Chris, you have an update.
And I tell you, Tim, the outpouring of love and support for Representative Baker and his family has been just overwhelming. When he originally posted this this morning about his daughter and son-in-law being tragically killed, that post now has received 43,000 likes, what do you call that?
Likes and follows.
Likes and follows. Yeah. 9,700 comments. And it's been shared 49,000 times.
Wow. So
a lot of love and outpouring for him. I wanted to bring an update. About 3 hours ago, Representative Baker posted this on his Facebook page. He said, it hurts my heart so bad to even say this, but we have confirmation from the embassy that Davy and Natalie's bodies have been safely transported there now. This is a huge answer to prayer for us. Thank you to everyone who is praying and offering condolences. It's been overwhelming, and we can't thank you enough. Naomi and I and the girls love you all so much. Revelations 21, verse 4.
Thank you for that, Chris. The GoFundMe page, I have found it. The GoFundMe page, of course, there is going to be expenses for the family to transport these bodies back home. There's going to be expenses for the memorial services and everything related thereto. Anytime there is loss, there is economic hardship attached. It doesn't matter who you are. I'm very happy to report that the GoFundMe goal of $20,000 has already been met and exceeded. $24,000 in counting with 110 donations. I'll be donating to this. I would urge you to as well.
Yes.
It's at Support for Baker and Lloyd Families. Support for Baker and Lloyd Families. On GoFundMe. It was set up by Chris Slinkard, CPA, and fellow Representative Dirk Deaton, who is an awesome human being as well. Please, it says, please pray for Missouri State Representative Ben Baker, his wife, Naomi. I can't imagine what I can't imagine what Naomi's going through. Their family, as well as the Lloyd family, their children, Natalie and Davy Lloyd, were serving as missionaries in Haiti and were killed by gangs. Please lift them up to the Lord. Help them in this time of need. As a CPA and friends of the family, Missouri State Representative Dirk Deaton and I are managing this on their behalf. All funds will go to the Baker Lloyd family for their use in this time of loss. There you have it. This is difficult, but Chris, Missourians, Americans, we're giving people. Yeah. And I love when I look at this. Let me tell you, folks, everybody from the hardest, most hardcore constitutional conservatives to the most liberal progressives in the General Assembly, people I know personally, are giving to this fund. This is heart-wrenching.
Yeah, it is. And I would ask anyone, if you can or able, to contribute to this GoFundMe page, and also just lift this family up in your prayers. This is, you know, we hear this all the time. The last thing you want as a parent is to bury one of your children. And unfortunately, Representative Brooks and his family is going to experience that tragedy. So they need your love, your prayers, your donations, and we know our audience.
Yeah.
We know the good people in our audience, and we know they'll do the right thing.
Chris, we talked about the situation in Haiti. I remember we talked to Jim Talent about this,
yeah.
And probably we've probably also talked to Steve Bucci about it more recently, and other of our foreign policy experts. Chris, this is because of the aftermath of a civil war in the country and the death of the former president. Is that right?
Is my memory right? The former president, I think his last name was Moises. He was assassinated.
That's right.
About 3 years ago, they had an interim president who left the country maybe about 6 months ago because of all the violence. So right now, Haiti is lawless. I mean, I'm dating myself here, but those of you that remember the old movie Escape from New York, John Carpenter movie from the 1980s. That's what Haiti is right now. It's basically just a lawless anarchy society where people do what they want to do, and armed gangs have factionalized the country and taken their little bits and parts of it and are running it. And it's just a lawless, evil society right now.
And people are wondering, well, why are people going there? Like, why would they do that? Well, because there are people who are called to this. It's an incredible calling. It's like, why do we have an all still an all-volunteer military. We're going to speak to a military man next, Chris Wright, who's a candidate for governor. He's a combat veteran. And why do people do that? Why do people sign up to be police officers, prosecutors? That was my first job. Why do we do these things? Why do we run for office? We're trying to give back. And some people have a strong calling to do as much as possible. And Chris, as we were talking about earlier, children are dying probably, I would guess, every hour of every day in Haiti. And it's a horrible situation. All the basic functions, because of everything you just described, of society don't exist in Haiti. Yeah. Everything is broken down from running water to the food supply. Yeah. And so Americans, the most giving, generous people on the planet, are trying to help. But it's getting to the point where you probably can't help unless you're going to put your life at grave risk.
Yeah. Haiti is a desperately poor country. We always know that. We always hear the moniker that's attached to Haiti, that it is the poorest country in the Western hemisphere. The poverty there is just absolutely destitute. That's what it was even before there was the big earthquake that happened there several years ago, where 10, 20, 30,000 people were killed. So you add on to that an earthquake, devastating earthquake in a country that is already devastatingly poor already. You just have sad conditions. Haiti, you know, it has a glorious history in a sense. It was the first island nation, the first African nation to overthrow slavery. They gained their independence from France, and I think in 1802, they had that glorious history of being the first to do that. But ever since the founding of that country, it has just been just an absolute hellhole of poverty. And there's a lot of reasons for that. People speculate. I won't go into here on the radio. It's Christian reasons. Mm-hmm. People talk about the founding of Haiti, how it was founded. Mm-hmm. That's why people think that Haiti's cursed.
And, you know, this is another lesson, too, in the rise and fall of nations and empires and how fragile, you know, we take peace and security really for granted in this country. I think we've seen over the last few years how fragile that is. When your institute, this is what happens. When the institutions that make a country great are attacked by people who don't care for those institutions anymore, the entire nation can crumble underneath itself. Yeah. Yeah. It's happened in places like Haiti. Yeah. It's happened around the world. It's happened with Russia and the Soviet Union time and time again. Look at Cuba. Cuba used to be a glorious island nation until the Castro brothers came in. So never take this, never think that something is forever when human beings are involved.
Pat Robertson, the late preacher, mentioned this several years ago after the earthquake there in Haiti, and it caused a lot of controversy, but it is a theory that has been going around basically for centuries, is that it was a historic feat for slaves to overthrow France, which was a great country at that time. And even the Haitian natives admit that this is what happened, is that a bunch of the leaders of the revolution, they went out into the woods and they had a voodoo ceremony. And they basically said that, help us overthrow our oppressor. And if you help us do this, whatever they were praying to, you have our souls, you have our forever if you do this. And by miracle, France was defeated. A lot of people think that those early leaders of Haiti sold their soul to the devil for their freedom, and that's why Haiti has been just cursed with so much bad luck these last couple of hundred years.
It is a truly troubled place, and that is a massive understatement. All right, folks, you can go to GoFundMe, and just, I found this in 3 seconds, support for Baker and Lloyd families. Support for Baker and Lloyd families. I'll just vouch, the Baker family are wonderful people. Mm-hmm. Hope you can help them out in this time of need. Pray for them indeed. Chris, it's 5:21, which means it's time to start talking some financial and economic news. We're going to be joined next by the great Dr. Aaron Hedlund. He is the chief economist at the Show Me Institute, and he's going to talk to us about a poll indicating that a majority of Americans believe we're in a recession, even though we're technically not. But man, why do Americans feel that way? I think we have some guesses on that, and how to approach economic data in a more common sense human way. Yeah, how to make those numbers interesting, vibes versus data. Next with Dr. Aaron Hedlund on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show here at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Attention shoppers, grocery prices are falling for the first time in a year. Cash-strapped consumers seeing a little relief just in time for that Memorial Day barbecue, with prices on food at home down 0.2% overall in April, according to the Labor Department.
They've been going up considerably since the pandemic. Now they're actually leveling off and decreasing because of the efficiencies that they've had, as well as these retailers pushing back on the price increases.
Meantime, the cost of dining out, it continues to climb, so there is a big price advantage to eating at home.
Well, there you go, Chris. Happy days are here again, right? Everything's fine. Just vote for Joe Biden for four more years of disaster.
I hope not, because we know Joe Biden will not make 4 years, and we'll be saying President Kamala Harris, and that's even spookier.
That's true indeed. Is the economy good? Is it bad? Is it somewhere in between? We got the guy who's got the answers on all of that and more.
What is your financial situation?
All of our holdings are tied up in the railroads.
Yeah, Reading Railroad, B&O Railroad, Pennsylvania Railroad.
I won second prize in a beauty contest. That's $50 right there.
Are you guys just saying Monopoly stuff?
And Dr. Aaron Hedlund joining us here. Once again, chief economist at the Show Me Institute, showmeinstitute.org, at Aaron Hedlund, at Aaron underscore Hedlund on Twitter, aaronhedlund.com. Dr. Hedlund, let's just start big picture, 35,000 foot. Where are we as we're entering summer 2024, barely 6 months before a major national election? The Democrats, Joe Biden, Corinne Jean-Pierre, our propaganda podium, say happy days are here again. Americans just don't understand how great this Biden economy is. Republicans say it's an absolute disaster. Dr. Aaron Hedlund, is it one or the other, or are we somewhere in between?
Well, I think if you're going to ask most Americans, are you better off now or were you better off at the beginning of 2020? I mean, COVID was a weird year, but before COVID happened, were you better off now versus then? I think a large majority of people would say they're better off back then. And the numbers don't lie. I mean, the reality is we've had over 20% increase in prices since early 21. You mentioned food prices. Food prices are up over 26% since then. Incomes, once you adjust for inflation, are down. People are racking up credit card debt at a record pace, and they're not even keeping up with their payments because delinquencies are on the rise. And housing's the least affordable it's really ever been. So it's no surprise to me when people are pessimistic about the current state of affairs.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Hill, I want to expand on that some more, because I am completely confused on the economy's performance. We had today report durable good orders rose 7/10% in April. That's three straight months. It's the first since the spring of 2023. Consumer sentiment is at an all-time low, though. And then we also have the stock market that is doing reasonably well as well. What is going on with this economy? It seems like it's doing really well, but then it's not.
Yeah, so I mean, certainly the stock market seems to be doing well, and I think the stock market is looking at a number of factors. I think they're assuming rates are going to be going down at some point, but they've been over-optimistic about that for quite a while. I think they're going to have to wait longer than they thought. But when I look at the fundamentals, and the fundamentals are that Americans are living through a cost-of-living crisis, and that's why there's this widespread pessimism that's going on right now. And inflation's coming down, but prices are still high. I mean, could it be worse? Sure. You could have mass unemployment. You could have a deep, deep recession. We're not seeing that. But cost of living crisis is pretty bad.
And Dr. Hedlund, to kind of prove that point, whatever the Biden administration or DC Democrats want to say, Americans, as you pointed out, feel the opposite. A recent Harvard-Harris poll indicates a majority of Americans believe we're in a recession. Now, Dr. Hedlund, it may not be technically in a recession, but when you look below the top line numbers, we do have some systemic problems in this economy, don't we? And that's probably what Americans are feeling. It's this great sense of unease out there, isn't there?
Yeah, and that's been almost the two-faced communication strategy that we've heard coming out of D.C. the past few years, which is, when the statistics show that we're in a recession, which we had a brief period of time when gross domestic product was contracting, then they kind of tried to redefine what it meant. And then now that particular statistic no longer shows a recession, now they're being overly technical and saying, oh, we're not in recession. Look at the stat. Well, okay, well, let's cut through the baloney. The reality is people feel worse off. They're not wrong. And there are, in fact, data points that explain why that is, namely that purchasing power is down. When you look at income adjusted for inflation, it's down multiple thousand dollars. Whereas if you looked at the period from 2017 to the end of 2019, it went up by $6,000. So that's why there's a difference in optimism.
Speaking with Dr. Aaron Hedlund, chief economist at the Show Me Institute and former chief domestic economist and senior advisor at the White House Council of Economic Advisors. Dr. Hedlund, J.P. Morgan chief Jamie Dimon says that he sees, quote unquote, a hard landing this year. And he said the most thing that he's worried about that is stagflation. How worried are you about stagflation?
Well, I think we're starting to see some version of that. I mean, I'm not worried about late 1970s double-digit unemployment kind of things, but what we're seeing is that inflation is still having a difficult time getting down to that 2% level. You know, it's come down from where it was. Again, inflation means price increases. The price increases are smaller. Prices themselves certainly aren't coming down by any measurable sense. And now we're starting to see growth slow down, too. I mean, we saw this over-exuberance, again, coming from the White House last year because GDP went up by 2.5%. Well, now it's not even coming in at that level. It's coming in at a slower rate. Consumers have blown through the $2 trillion of savings they built up from COVID checks and unemployment insurance, and they're turning to their credit cards, and they're tapping out on those. So I think consumers are kind of running out of space to deal with things, and if they pull back, we're going to see both a slowdown in the economy on top of this cost of living crisis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Dr. Hedlund, what about one of the most prominent indicators for most Americans as to how the economy is doing? And that's the real estate world, right? Like the ability to purchase a home, especially for first time home buyers. There's some real, this is something I notice that the White House and that Washington DC like avoids like the plague. They're not talking about homeownership and real estate prices, the lack of inventory, mortgage rates being sky high comparatively over the last few years. It's a real problem, isn't it, Aaron, if the next generation of Americans can't afford the defining characteristic of the American dream, which is to be able to purchase a piece of real estate, particularly a home.
Yeah, home ownership has never been further out of reach than it is right now. Some people, you know, many people can remember double-digit interest rates in the early 1980s, but house prices were a lot lower. So when you combine high house prices with still relatively high-ish mortgage rates, that combination has made housing way less affordable than it's ever been. And for perspective, if you were to get a median kind of typical priced home now compared to a few years ago, you'd be spending about $1,400 more per month. That's not the total. That's the increase. So for many people, that's just complete. It's almost a mockery to talk about the homeownership dream because it's just not remotely feasible for them.
Dr. Hedlund, France, Brazil, and other nations recently floated a global wealth tax on billionaires. Our Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said no to that. Is Janet Yellen becoming a supply sider?
Well, it depends what kind of curve you're grading on. Unfortunately, there's a lot of basket case South American countries that have basically been playing the class warfare game for decades, and it's certainly not prospered because of it. And it's been interesting to watch, for example, Argentina with their new leader going the complete opposite direction. Argentina has this history of a lot of class warfare, and it's kind of resulted in a lot of government default. The new guy is doing something different, and we'll see if they can accomplish some success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dr. Hedlund, not to get too deep in the weeds with Javier Milei, who you were just referring to in Argentina, but you know he came in and he's kind of slashed and burned the old model there, right? And we're all watching this and experiencing a real experiment here, right? In this nation that's been, you know, just so devastated by left leaning policies, especially on the economic side, and he's kind of taken a battle axe to all that. And I think Argentina is experiencing some early signs of success, right? There's going to be a lot of pain, but likely some gain that could prove that, you know, hey, look, free market capitalism is really the way to go if you want to save a nation.
Absolutely. Yeah, what he's trying to do is the right thing to do. And it's fighting decades of a complete opposite philosophy that's been entrenched throughout many corners of society there. But what he's doing, if he can accomplish that, which also requires getting the legislature to come on his side, at least to some extent, could be a miracle there. I mean, you've already seen some evidence of inflation coming down and He's doing the right thing, and I wish that he's able to accomplish that.
Dr. Hedlund, I mentioned to you earlier about J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon saying that he was worried about stagflation. Goldman Sachs, another CEO, David Solomon, he has predicted that the Federal Reserve will not cut interest rates this year. What do you think about that prediction?
Well, I mean, you have to rewind the tape from some of our previous calls months ago. I said back in December that when Powell was talking about rate cuts, that it was premature. And I was skeptical that there was no way we were ever going to see 6 rate cuts this year. I thought at most maybe we'd see 1 or 2. And it could be 0. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 0 at all. But this is unfortunately playing out kind of how I thought it would, which was you got to land the plane. You got to land the inflation plane. You can't stay close enough and then call it a victory. And we're seeing it's proving more stubborn than some people thought.
Joey, do we have those tapes of Dr. Hedlund predicting that?
Oh, we have a lot of blackmail okay. on Dr. Hedlund.
Okay, got it. We have those tapes, Dr. Hedlund.
The volumes are deep and wide. So Aaron, where are we? I've kind of lost track. Where are we with the inflationary rates? And what is the next? Is there a Fed meeting on the horizon? And what have you been able to discern from the tea leaves as to where these inflationary rates might go and what the Fed's reaction might be to it?
So there's a couple of different stats the Fed looks at. There's one measure of inflation, which is kind of in upper twos. It's slightly below 3. And then there's the other measure that kind of most people pay attention to, which is more in the mid 3s. So it's definitely down from where it was, but they want it to be 2.0 or lower, and they want it to stay there.
No
matter which one you look at, it's not there. And if you look at the past few months, it's kind of gone in the wrong direction. I think if there's a rate cut, most people are thinking it's not going to happen before September, and it may not even happen until November. I think the likelihood of anything before then is very, very unlikely. We've had various Fed governors give speeches to say they want to see several months in a row of good inflation before they even talk about rate cuts. So it's almost impossible to imagine a rate cut before then. And again, there may be a scenario where we see nothing until 2025.
Dr. Hedlund, I have to tell you, we're a little hurt and disappointed by you, sir.
Oh.
You want to know why?
Is that true? Why that?
Because on April 10th, you testified before the House Committee on Small Business. You didn't tell us anything about this. You testified on the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. You said there were 3 primary goals of that act. What were they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, so I would say one thing was reversing the decline in the stagnation of living standards that had gone on for several years after the financial crisis. And also to make us globally competitive on the world stage, which I think we did on the corporate tax side of things. And it was also to kind of boost growth and paychecks. And I think it accomplished on all those ends. And that makes 2025 a big, big year because a lot of the provisions of that tax law are going to expire unless they get extended. So there's a lot of political uncertainty and economic uncertainty that will be figuring out what happens in the next 6 months.
Hey, next time you do that, let us know. That's kind of a big deal.
That's noteworthy. Yeah, big stuff.
I will make sure to let you know.
Appreciate that.
Chris, I'm glad you brought that up because I will now ask Dr. Hedlund about the fact that, you know, I want to add, this is great because Dr. Hedlund, the left, of course, continues to say, and every time they continue to say something, I just believe like they're lying over and over and over again to just try to make the media prove their point for them. But they've said for the last, 7 years now since the Trump Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was passed, giveaways to the rich, it was just for the wealthy, it didn't help the middle class. Dr. Hedlund, we have now what, like nearly 7 years of data here, and I think an innumerable number of studies, maybe even some that you've written or helped write, have published that showed the Trump Tax Cuts and Jobs Act actually helped the middle class, the working class, small business owners the most. So tell me if that's true. And number two, if they're not extended, it's going to be devastating for our economy, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the data is abundantly clear. I mean, what you saw in the years after the passage of those tax cuts was a blue-collar boom. You saw the typical family's income after inflation go up by $6,000. You saw wage increases across the board. And by the way, wage increases were faster at the bottom than they were at the top. Inequality actually narrowed after this episode. So, and you saw historically low poverty rates for every single demographic group, 50-year lows in unemployment, and in some cases, record lows. So the evidence is very, very clear. Unfortunately, the left is just sort of stuck in Trump derangement syndrome,
mm-hmm.
and they over-personalize things instead of just looking at the record of success.
Dr. Hedlund, final question for you here, and we've talked about this before. The House has made it official. They have passed the CBDC Anti-Surveillance State Act that bars the Federal Reserve from issuing a central bank digital currency or cryptocurrency unless it has explicit authorization from Congress. Was this law needed, or was this bill needed?
Yeah, I think it's good news. I mean, the Fed has been a little bit coy about whether they want to do that or not. And I think this just makes it clear that they don't have the authority to do that on their own. I don't think we should have a CBDC, period. But for sure, if we were ever to even contemplate that, it should be the American people who authorize that via the representatives instead of the Fed doing it unilaterally. Mm. So I think it was a good move.
Fantastic. Dr. Aaron Hedlund, have a great weekend with your wonderful family and all your loved ones and friends. We want to thank you for everything you do for us throughout the year. We'll talk to you on the backside of the holiday weekend as we head into the summer. Dr. Aaron Hedlund, Chief Economist of the Show Me Institute, showmeinstitute.org, aaronhedlund.com, and on Twitter, X, at Aaron_Hedlund. Thanks so much, Aaron. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend. Mm-hmm.
You too as well. All right, we're going to get lickety-split to our final segment and very important guest of the afternoon. He is candidate and veteran, candidate for governor of the state of Missouri, Chris Wright. He's going to join us in studio to talk about how his campaign is going as he crisscrosses the Show Me State. Next on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
For weeks, it seemed like getting a budget done in time to the governor's desk was just going to be impossible as the spending plan stood at an impasse in both the House and the Senate. But within the final hours, lawmakers didn't find a compromise. But it is to fund the state $52 billion worth for next year. Governor Mike Parson now calling the spending plan problematic and saying it will need to be fixed.
I don't think there's any question. There's a lot of disingenuous numbers to this whole budget. I think we're already seeing that very early on.
5:47 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. And as advertised, we have in studio with us Chris Wright, who is a candidate for governor. He has been with us before. Chris, welcome to the show.
I appreciate you guys having me.
Excellent. You heard that clip there from Governor Parsons. He's in his last term. He's heading off to the sunset. One of the criticisms of Governor Parsons this session was he wasn't really active in the legislature trying to get bills passed and showing a presence. Would you agree with that?
I would 100% agree with that.
And what would you do different?
Be proactive. So one of the things that first of all, before we get started, mm-hmm. I want to thank all the veterans, first mm-hmm. responders, and teachers out there, especially this weekend being Memorial Day weekend. You know, a lot of people are going to have a good time, drink some beer, go out on the boat, barbecue, whatever. But I just want to encourage everybody to remember why they have that ability. And that's the soldiers and airmen and Marines and Navy who gave the ultimate sacrifice for them, for us to be able to enjoy that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris, I was gonna ask you about that and how important this weekend must be to someone like you who has served as a combat veteran. I'm sure that you have had loss in your life from colleagues and friends throughout the years. And, you know, the reason that I would imagine the reason that you're so called to service is because you think that's a priority for all Missourians, for all Americans, right? We all should try to give back in some way. And you running for governor is just a brick in that continuum of your life.
It really is, because, you know, I believe service to others is really what makes the world go round and puts a positive light into our lives. But yeah, you know, honestly, that's just how the Lord made me. I remember, you know, getting out of high school, I thought I was going to be a kindergarten teacher. I went to college, absolutely hated it. And I was lost and didn't know what I wanted to do. And something made me decide to go to the police academy, and oh my gosh, I loved every minute of it. And doing about 5 years of that, I just knew I was born to serve, mm-hmm. you know. At the same time, I joined the military, and that's what I've done my entire adult life since the age of 18 is mm-hmm. serve.
Chris, some polling came out yesterday from a firm called Peak Polling, which showed a much tighter race than other polls have shown recently. It almost is a neck and neck race between your three candidates. That means the race is tightening. Are you seeing that out on the campaign trail?
I don't see the race tightening. I see it as a two-man race.
Okay.
To be honest with you, from what I see, literally traveling the tens of thousands of miles that I've traveled and going to all the events and the cities, mm-hmm. I don't know how much stock I'd put in the poll.
Okay.
Speaking to Chris Wright, who's a candidate for governor of the great state of Missouri. Chris, as someone who has served his state and his nation, who has traveled the world and has been in other countries, are you disturbed about what we've seen about the breakdown of our institutions as far as our border security and our law enforcement? You're a former law enforcement officer yourself. And what would you do regarding crime and punishment, law and order, if you were the governor of the state of Missouri?
Absolutely. You know, I've been to other countries, and other countries have a more secure border than what we have right now. And it's absolutely appalling, because you go back to the military members that have bled and sweated and died, and we're just letting any Tom, Dick, and Harry come into our country, and some people just think of it as illegal immigrants. Yes, but it's so much more than that. There's terrorists, there's drugs, human trafficking. I mean, the laundry list of bad things just goes on and on and on. And, you know, the question is, what's something that I could do to help that? Again, I like to be very proactive, and right now we're having to be reactive, and that's not our fault. That's the Biden administration's fault. But since we have to be reactive, you know, our National Guard has about 8,500 members, active members that serve, and just to send a few hundred down there is you're putting a Band-Aid on a problem again. And we have so many service members in the National Guard, which the governor controls. We could be sending thousands of troops. We've got the money to fund it. We could be sending thousands of troops from the National Guard and really making a difference. And, you know, Missouri in the last few years has really focused on infantry units. That is a perfect scenario for infantry soldiers to go down there. That's part of what infantry does.
Because our Border Patrol is overwhelmed, right?
It's overwhelmed. And I'm going to kind of take a different approach. I would not have sent highway patrolmen down there, because we've got to protect Missouri. The problem's already here in Missouri. Let's keep our highway patrolmen here and let's send more National Guard troops down to the border.
Okay. Speaking with Chris Wright, candidate for governor of Missouri. Chris, seemed like a couple of the issues in the governor's race that has been bubbling up over the past few months is the gas tax that was passed a few years ago, and foreign ownership of land, specifically China owning that land. Your positions on those two issues.
So the tax should, if I'm governor, it's going to be, if it's within my power, it's going to be immediately repealed. That should have never happened. That was voted down, and we still got stuck with it. And as far as the ownership, specifically China, 100% China should never own anything in Missouri, in America. China is the enemy. They are an adversary. And in the matter of national security, nothing Chinese owned should ever be part of Missouri.
Chris, I know one of the big issues that you have focused on, and we talked about this last time, is the fact that our national security is threatened by our energy policy quite a bit, and we have a lot of energy related issues here in the state of Missouri. What would you want to focus on as governor? What would you direct the legislature to focus on as well in that regard?
You know, here in Missouri, we have kind of a unique opportunity, or a unique position, where I used to be scared of nuclear power, but I had a 2-hour-long course learning the truth, the good, the bad, the ugly about nuclear power. And I'd be working with the legislature to start looking at nuclear. It's stronger, It's cleaner and it's just more powerful, and it would make the rates actually drop. And my goodness, we teach nuclear science in Missouri. We have a reactor already in Callaway County. Mm-hmm. To me, it's a no-brainer in my opinion.
All right, Chris, in our remaining couple of minutes, your two major candidates, main candidates, I guess, probably have name recognition. They are politicians currently serving. What makes you the best person to be the next governor of Missouri?
It's literally what everybody is begging for. It's somebody who is not a part of the political apparatus or the establishment, as you would say. I'm not controlled by money. I can prove that with my Missouri Ethics Commission reports. I have my own money. I owe zero favors to anybody in Jeff City. As a business owner, as a senior NCO in the military, as former law enforcement, I have the skill set and the critical thinking skills to make those hard decisions. Anybody can make a easy decision. You know, I hear a lot of times, well, my record's 98% conservative voting. Okay. Well, if you're a conservative, that's the way it should be. What do you do whenever the hard decisions need to be made? And that's what I've done my entire adult life.
Tell the folks where they can get more information about your campaign.
www.ChrisWright4MOGovernor.
All right, Chris, final thing, Tim, if you don't mind.
Yep.
Your last name is Wright. You are a conservative.
Yes.
You haven't been kicking around some type of good campaign slogan there using your last name and Wright and conservative and
no,
Wright.
No, it's how I got into this to begin with.
Wright for Missouri.
Wright is Wright for Missouri.
No, I've been using it was a calling for me to get in here to run for governor. And it's all about conquering Jericho, because Jericho is supposed to be an inconquerable city.
Mm-hmm.
And I relate that with Jeff City, and with the Lord backing you, anything can happen.
Tim and I give you permission to use Wright.
Yes.
Is Wright.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Is right.
And you're
Wright is right for Jeff City. I can't even get it out.
And you're a heck of a happy warrior, Chris. Thanks for coming in here. Thank you for all your service.
Thank you, Chris Wright. Thank you, Tim Jones. Thank you, Joey V. Thank you for everyone who listened today. We had a fantastic show. Up next, of course, is Larry Connors USA from 6 to 8, and from 8 to 10 is the Greg Carter Show. You are listening to
Rob Carter,
excuse me. I know a Greg Carter. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. Drive safe, have a great weekend, and a safe holiday.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.